All right, so we're getting a couple minutes late start, and we have a lot to cover, but we'll try and see what we can do. So we discussed last week one idea about the introduction, the addition of a 19th bracha of Shmoneh Esrei. We talked about the concept of why this bracha only became necessary at the point in history when it came, and its context in being a universal need. And that was our discussion last week. I want to discuss this week first, just to the point that I mentioned at the very end last week. I wanted to go through, which is just some of the significance of this being the 19th bracha and being added in Shmoneh Esrei, and then try and talk about very briefly the more thematic point of the bracha. So the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Chaf Ches Amud Beis goes through a number of explanations of where this idea of 18 brachos came from. These 18 brachos of Shmoneh Esrei, what do they represent? Why specifically 18? And the Gemara there gives three reasons. There's really Yerushalmi that gives a couple more reasons, but our Gemara gives three reasons. The Gemara in Brachos Chaf Ches says, first thing it says is that they correspond to the 18 mentions of Hashem's name in Mizmor, I think it's Lamed Tess, or unless it's Chaf Tess, the Mizmor LeDavid, Havu L'Shem B'nei Elim, that we say towards the end of Kabbalah Shabbos. It is Mizmor Tehillim Chaf Tess, chapter 29 of Tehillim, that it's corresponding to the 18 mentions of Hashem's name in that Mizmor. And the Gemara says that it's, different opinion says that it's corresponding to the 18 mentions of Hashem's name in Kriyat Shema. And then the third one says that it's corresponding to the 18 vertebrae in the spine. So that one I'm going to leave aside for now to not discuss that one. There's what to talk about there also, but just for our purposes now, leave that on the side for a moment, or for tonight at least.
What about just basic gematria, chayit, 18, like 18? They don't go there.
They don't go there.
Okay.
So the Gemara then asks, so the Gemara says, what do you mean 18 brachos? There are 19 brachos, right? Gemara says, explains, yeah, there was a 19th one that was added in later. And the Gemara then asks, well, this 19th one, so where does it correspond to? So the Gemara says, according to each of the three explanations, they ask to explain where this 19th bracha fits in. According to the idea that they correspond to the 18 times that Hashem's name is mentioned in Parakhav Tesla Tehillim, so the Gemara says that it's corresponding to one other alternate name of Hashem which is mentioned when it says Kael HaKavod Hirim, that the God of Honor thunders. So it's that mention of Kael, that name of Hashem, that's number 19. And the Gemara says, according in Kriyat Shema, it's the Echad of Kriyat Shema. It's corresponding to the Echad of Kriyat Shema. And according to the opinion that it was corresponding to the Chulios Shebeshidra, that the vertebrae in the spine, it says that there's the Gemara's not clear if it's at the top or at the bottom, that there's a small vertebrae. I don't know if vertebrae is what's singular or plural there. Vertebra. I don't know. That last link in the spine, that there's one small link which does not have any bones coming out of it, and that's the 19th. That's the corresponding 19th bracha, which, you know, it's not like a complete vertebrae, but it's still, you know, could be counted. So
that's rather out there. I mean, in terms of the categories of there's 18 in this Tehillah, there's 18 in Kriyat Shema, and then number of vertebra. It's like one of these things is not like the others. It's way out there. There could be another parak somewhere where there would be 18 something. It seems like that's very far on the outside of what the two others represent.
Right. All right. So yeah. So I don't want to discuss the idea behind it, but you know, basically, in part, we talk about the spine is what allows a person to stand up straight, and that's the Gemara says that when you bow in Shmoneh Esrei, you're supposed to bow to the point that all of your vertebrae stick out. Because the whole point is that the entire standing of a person should be subjected to Hashem, and therefore we recognize our subjugation to Hashem in all of the all these 18 aspects in the entirety of our spine. That which allows us to stand up is completely subjugated to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Maharal points out that he says this is Yadua. It's probably only Yadua to anatomy students, but says it's Yadua that 12 of the vertebrae have major ribs and 6 of them only have minor ribs, and he says that's the 12 brachos emtzos, the 12 middle brachos, which are the primary part of Shmona Esrei. The main, we've discussed before, the main element of Shmona Esrei is actually the requests. The shavach at the beginning is a lead into the requests, and the hodah at the end is coming off of the requests, but the center focus of Shmona Esrei is that, and that's the 12 major vertebrae, and then the 6 other ones only have minor ribs coming off, is the 3 first brachos and the 3 second brachos. So he says that it's very, it's not just a coincidence that it's that Chazal chose the vertebrae as the model. But we're not going to get into that. So the 2 points that we're to talk about is this: says that the 19th bracha corresponds to Kala Kavod Hirim, or to the Echad of Kriyishma. So we mentioned in the past, this dovetails very nicely, and then we'll try and get to the meaning of this, that the Rabbeinu Bechaye, who says that the 18 brachos of Shmona Esrei are all hinted at and corresponding to the name of Hashem of Yudke Vavke, because the name of Hashem of Yudke Vavke, the Shem Havaya, has 12 permutations. There are 4 letters, and 2 of them are the same. So you end up with 12 different permutations of how the letters could be rearranged. And says the Rabbeinu Bechaye that that splits up into 3, 3, and 6. That the first 3 brachos and the last 3 brachos. And then he says the middle 12 brachos are 6 brachos, which are panim v'achor. They're a front and a back. They correspond to each other. That the first 6 correspond to the second 6. And we've discussed the Riva before. It talks about
heads and tails of a coin.
Some, right, kind of like that. And he says, that only accounts for 18 of the brachos. And he says, that's because only 18 of the brachos are connected to the name of Hashem of Yudke Vavke. There's one other bracha, he says, and that bracha, the bracha of Vilam Al-Shinim, is not hinted at, is not counted, because it is not correlated to the Shem Havaya, because the 19th bracha, the bracha of Vilam Al-Shinim, is the bracha of Din. It's the bracha of judgment, of executing, carrying out justice and judgment against the Rishayim, and that is rooted in the shame of Din, the shame of Kale, of Aleph Lamed, is the name, a name of Din, and that's where that bracha is rooted. So that's very nice what the Gemara says, that the 18 times that it mentions Hashem's name of Yudke Vavke in the 29th chapter of Tehillim, and then the 19th bracha is Kale HaKavod Hirim, that name of Hashem, of Aleph Lamed, that name which is the name of Din. So the nature of the bracha of Vilam Al-Shinim is that it's a fundamentally different nature of bracha than the rest of Shmona Esrei. It is a bracha of Din against the Rishayim. So the Maharsha points out that it's not coincidental that it's the name Kale in Kale HaKavod Hirim. It's not just that that name happened to crop up somewhere in the bracha, so we can count that too. It says that Kale HaKavod Hirim, that the God of Kavod thunders. So the Gemara says in the last parak of Brachos, the Gemara says that the whole Gemara, it says that Lo Nivru Hareinim Ela Lishbot Akmumios Shebaleiv, that thunder was only created to smooth out, to straighten out the twistedness of the heart. Right? The bracha we make on thunder is kocho v'gvuraso mali olam, that the thunder is koach, it's powerful. You know, a big boom of thunder shows you, it's can be frightening. It's very powerful, right? There's a great strength that's we understand intuitively is intimated in that, and that was only created in order to smooth out the crookedness or the twistedness of man's heart. So that's the Kale HaKavod Hirim, and that's the name of Kale, that name of Din, which is where the 19th bracha comes from, and the role of Din in the world, the role of judgment, of strict, having justice. The reason why Kadosh Baruch Hu has Din is in order to return the Ra, to return those corrupted, those evil parts of the world, to fit them back into the Taklis. It's to give the just rewards, to have something dealt with in a way commensurate with what was done wrong, to redirect that into fitting in with the Taklis. How does that work? Because Din, judgment, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu executes justice, so it shows the complete yichud, the complete unity or the complete singularity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's control, of Hashem's control of the world. Everything conforms to His purpose. And the way that the Ramchal really expresses this, says that everything in the world is going to fit into showing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. And he says that at the end, all of the Ra, or all of the Rishayim rather, will have one of three, there will be one of three directions that they can go. They can either do teshuvah, they can be punished for their evil, and through that it'll be rectified, or they can cease to exist. So the all of the evil will be redirected. The evil itself will be used as a tool to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ultimately in charge. When it's shown that which was a deviation from Ratzon Hashem, that itself is redirected to fit into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, that's the role of Din. That's what judgment, the purpose, the tachlis of judgment is, that it fits everything, that the deviation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will back into the tachlis for which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. That's the only reason that it's necessary, and that's where the 19th bracha is, that bracha of Din, of the end of the Rishayim, of redirecting that the part of creation which is not following in the path that it's supposed to go back into the tachlis, the purpose for which the world was created. The Maharsha says that the two answers of the explanations of the Gemara, the idea of Kael HaKavod Hirim, and the idea that it's that the 19th bracha corresponds to the Echad of Kriyishma. So the Maharsha doesn't explain how, but he says that the Gemara says that the one opinion said that the 18 brachos correspond to the 18 mentions of Hashem's name in Kriyishma, and the 19th bracha corresponds to the Echad in Kriyishma, Hashem Echad, to the Echad. So the Maharsha says that those two ideas, they're really getting to the same point, they're driving at the same point, and the Maharsha does not explain how. It doesn't explain what exactly the relationship or point of the two is, but I think along the lines of what we're saying, that this is exactly what it means, that the bracha of Din is keneged the echad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the Ra, the Risha, the evil in the world, is that which is seemingly deviates from the echad that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Ein od milvado, that's the only real, that's the only thing that exists, that's the only value that matters. And Din is machzir, Din returns, reinstates that echad, that unity, that singularity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's control is maintained, is reinstated through Din, and therefore the bracha of Din is the bracha of echad. It's the bracha which brings everything under that echad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem Echad, of Ein Od Milvado, that there is nothing else, and everything fits into the ultimate direction that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for the world.
So this din is directed to Klal Yisrael, all of humankind, or Bria, everything? What's the din, what's the audience of the din as you're describing it here?
I would go with everyone.
Every person. Okay. Because the din goes all the way back to Adam and Chava, it's just baked into into personhood.
It's baked into free will. There is, discussion about that the actions of man can affect the rest of the world also.
Sure.
In such a way that, we find that, for example, by the Mabel, that the different animals were not allowed into the Teva because they had, corrupted their ways. So they were, you know, influenced by the state of man and how man had corrupted as we corrupted the whole world. So, but that's not like din in terms of, you know, deserving or undeserving. That's more of a consequence that if something has been, you know, messed up, then there's, then you know, then it's not.
So it's not that there could be rot in animals, that the animals can be lowered as a result of the bechira of humans.
Right, and we might call that ra, but we wouldn't call it a bechira of ra. The animals cannot choose to do evil, right? All right.
Well, there was no carnivore by Gan Eden, right? There was no meat eating. There was no killing. So right at the beginning, there was no animals eating other animals.
Well, that's not necessarily what's bad. It's not evil for an animal to eat another animal.
Not now it's not, but maybe that's, they don't have a bechira not to eat the animal.
Right, by the Mabul, what they're discussing is that animals were either intermarrying with other species, which was not something that animals were supposed to do, or that there was animal homosexuality going on. So that's, you know, the corruption that's being referred to there. Alright, so point number one. I wanted to briefly also just re-mention this, since we've mentioned this before. The Riva has a very similar idea to the Rabbeinu Lechaye, but he counts it a little bit differently. He also says the same thing, that the middle brachos are six corresponding to another six, with then a 13th not counted. But he says that there's a different 13th which is not counted. He says the 13th one that is not counted is Shema Kolenu, because he says Shema Kolenu is a summary, sum up bracha, which is the capstone of everything. That's not part of the correspondence. And he says the first six are the personal brachos of personal nature, and the next six are the reflection of that over into a public nature. So he goes through and he explains how each of them parallel to each other in a personal way versus a public way. And so by the bracha of the Lam Al Shinim, the Lam Al Shinim lines up with the bracha of Slach Lanu, of forgiveness, which follows the bracha of tshuva. So the bracha of slach lanu, the bracha of forgiveness. And the Riva explains, because heim hamachtinim v'nidonim b'shoftim k'sherim, because these evildoers, they are the machtim, they are the sinners, or the causers of sin, v'nidonim b'shoftim k'sherim, and they will be judged through the shoftim k'sherim, the appropriate judges. So, just to explain this very briefly, so just as on the individual level, on the personal level, that tshuva is the path to rectification, tshuva is, so to speak, the method towards repairing oneself, towards turning oneself around. And slach lanu, slicha, is the actual removal of the chait in the pagam. Slicha, as we mentioned, is where the actual sin is undone, is either removed or forgiven or whatever, depending on the level of the sin, whatever happens to it. But the actual undoing of the impact of the sin itself, or the lessening of it, but the affecting the actual reality of that which was done wrong. So too, Hashiva Shovtenu is the national Hechatimsa, the national method or means of the removal of Ra, the reinstitution of Shoftim, of the Shoftim Kivarishona, the righteous judges who are Tamnei Chachamim and do everything Al Pi the Torah, that is the means of the removal of the Ra itself, and Vilam Al Shinim is the actual removal, is the result, is after you have the reinstatement of the judges. So then you have that can lead to the undoing, to the removal of the Ra itself. That's the parallel between.
So that's why Hoshivo has to come first.
That's why Hashiva Shoftenu has to come first. Right? And that's the correspondence. On a personal level, there's tshuva and then the slicha. The tshuva results in the slicha. And in the public, on the national level, the Hashiva Shoftenu results in the Vilam Al Shinim. It's pointed out by some Mefarshim that this bracha very uniquely starts with a vav, vil amal shinim, right? Because it's a hemshech of the previous bracha, that there's the return of the shoftim, and then vil amal shinim al tikva, and then through the result, the follow-up to that is that the eradication of evil.
Is it assumed that the Rishonim are not going to do tshuva, that they need the shoftim to kick them out?
It is not assumed, and the shoftim are not necessarily going to kick them out, and that the hope is that they do tshuva. One of the things which is mentioned by the Mefarshim, there is a large discussion of the philosophical implications of davening for the eradication of evildoers, which we'll talk about in a moment, whether or not that is what we're actually davening for. But one of the things which is mentioned, my mind exactly who says it, but somebody points out that, I think it's the Eitz Yosef, I think, who says it. Don't quote me on that. It's on the recording, so I guess I can't deny it later. But that says that we had an earlier bracha in Shmon Esrei in which we davened for tshuva. And when we davened for tshuva, even though it was a personal tefillah, we davened it b'lashon rabim. We davened for tshuva for everyone. So we already davened that those who are able, those who are in the ballpark of doing teshuvah, should be assisted upon that path. Now you have those who even afterwards will not do teshuvah. So those are the people that then have the lam al shinim, that they it's better off that they just be gotten rid of, the influence that they have in others. It's better for themselves if they're just going to continue to be bad, that they be gotten rid of. It's better for the world. But so that's the one element of what the din could be talking about. All right, so we're going to keep going. I have one last part that I want to discuss here. I don't have to leave at 9 tonight, so I don't know if everyone minds if we end up going like 2 minutes over, if everyone will forgive me for that. Just wanted to talk about something more fundamental in the nature of this bracha, something I mentioned a moment ago. Exactly what is the direction of this request when we are davening? Are we davening for the destruction of the wicked and the annihilation of those who do evil? What exactly are we praying for in this bracha? And what exactly is, you know, the moral justification for something like that? So just to introduce this, so the Gemara in Brachos, that same Gemara that we were referring to before on Chav Chasam and Beis, writes that the author of the 19th Bracha was a sage named Shmuel HaKapha. And we'll get back to
Rabban Gamliel.
Right. So we'll get back to the Gemara itself in a moment. But so I just want to just talk for a moment about, you know, Shmuel HaKapha, and more specifically the teaching of Shmuel HaKatan. If you look in Pirkei Avos, in Perek Daled, chapter 4, I believe in Art Scrolls count, if you look in Pirkei Avos, there are many different divisions of the Mishnayos, so you can end up with their numbers, but in the Art Scroll count of the Mishnayos, it's Mishnah 24. So, Shmuel HaKatan Omer, Shmuel HaKatan says, Bin fall oyivcha al tismach, at the fall of your enemies, do not rejoice. Ube kishala ubi kashlo al yagel libecha, and do not let your heart rejoice in his stumbling. Pen yir Hashem v'rabeina v'heishiv me'olav apo, lest Hashem see it and it upset him, and he turns his wrath towards you. So, just a couple things to talk about here. First of all, why not be happy at the fall of your enemies? You know, if your enemies suffer, if they have reason to be your enemies, so you know they're doing something wrong. So why not be happy about the downfall of your enemies? Question number one. Question number two is, this might be harder for you to see not looking at the actual Mishnah, but if you were looking at the Mishnah, you would see it says, Shmuel HaKatan says. Then you have a quotation mark, followed by everything we just read, followed by an end quote. And and that is all a quote from a pasuk in Mishle, in Perek Chaf Dalet of Mishle, that says, Abin Poloi Vecha Al Tismach. that's it. The fall of your enemies, don't be happy. So, says the Mishnah, Shmuel HaKatan says, and then it's followed by a quote from a Mishle. The entirety of Shmuel HaKatan's statement is a quote from Mishle. So, Shmuel HaKatan seemingly is essentially plagiarizing, right? So Shmuel HaKatan says, and the entire thing that he says is just a quote of a pasuk. Quotes a pasuk, right? So
verbatim,
right? No addition, no subtraction, just the pasuk. So some mafarshim say that the point here is that, like many things in Pirkei Avos, that these things, in a number of them, it says Hu Haya Omer, he used to say. Right, Shmuel Katan Omer, he said that it's basically, this is not just something that they happened to say once. This was, you know, something, this teaching was something that they were always saying, right? And so the Mishnah says this because that's what Shmuel Katan always used to say when he would give people Musar. This is the pasuk he would always use, and that's what he always used to say. So it's a little bit, you know, that it's, I guess, you know, a nice historical note, but like, what does that teach us? It's just, you know, some biographical information about Shmuel HaKatan that he used to always quote this pasuk. So I already had the pasuk before Shmuel HaKatan, you know, they told me that Shmuel HaKatan used to quote it. So all I know more now is seemingly a historical fact about Shmuel HaKatan, that he used to very often quote this pasuk. So what exactly is the Mishnah coming to teach me? What do I get out of that? The last question I want to ask is, Mr. Zeeler, would you be okay with it if from now on we call you Little Dave?
Right, exactly. Shmuel HaKatan.
Right, so Shmuel HaKatan.
You should say Dr. Zeeler if you're
going
to say you're okay with Little Dave.
Dr. Zeeler, you okay? From now on you are you're Little
it's really
Dave.
Really take me down a notch.
That's right. So what exactly is the name Shmuel HaKatan? So
he's no Shmuel HaNavi, that's for sure.
Right. So the Gemara says in Brachos, getting back to that Gemara in Brachos, the Gemara says that they wanted to establish a bracha connected the tzadukim, connected the corresponding to the heretics, to the people who are giving the Jews trouble, and they said, who can design or draft this bracha against the malshinim? And they looked around, and Shmuel HaKatan, he got up, and he was the one who was able to do it, right? So the Gemara goes on, it says
what does that mean, that he had Ruach HaKodesh?
Well, so seemingly, I don't know if you see specifically from there that he had Ruach HaKodesh. I think from a separate stage of the Gemara, you see that there must have been some aspect, some element of Ruach HaKodesh in the design of the bracha. We won't get into that now, but basically, so the one person qualified to write the bracha was Shmuel HaKatan, right? It says, who can do this? So they looked around, no one could. Oh, Shmuel HaKatan, he got up, and he was able to do it. So it seems like this bracha, for some reason, you know, like, they have plenty of Talmidei Chachamim there, they're all fully fluent in Hebrew and competent in Jewish thought, and you know, what exactly was this, it required such expertise that they needed to find the one guy who could write it, and Shmuel HaKatan was the guy who got up and wrote it, right? And last point before we put everything back together, so what does this bracha say? Bracha says that the slanderers, or in different versions, the heretics, whatever the version is, should have no hope, and all the evil should be destroyed, and all of your enemies should be cut off, and they should be uprooted, and they should be smashed down, and they should be broken, right? So a very uplifting, happy kind of bracha, right? Which of course is perfectly fitting for someone like Shmuel HaKatan, who says that discussion about how you should not be happy at the downfall of your enemies, right? So why exactly is it that the one person who was qualified to write this bracha was Shmuel HaKatan? So we'll start with why he was called. Let's try to answer the questions we had on the Mishnah. So, first of all, the reason he was called Shmuel HaKatan, it's not really a question on the Mishnah, it's just a question in general, but I decided to make it a question on the Mishnah, that the Gemara said, there's two places where they explain his name. In one of them, it says that it was necessary to distinguish between him and Shmuel HaNavi. He was Shmuel HaKatan. He was the smaller Shmuel. Shmuel HaNavi was greater, and he wasn't as great as Shmuel HaNavi, right?
They were contemporaries.
But they were not contemporaries by many centuries. But no one ever felt it necessary to distinguish my basketball skills from LeBron James' basketball skills. No one ever felt it was necessary to point out that I'm the little guy and he's the big guy, right?
Uh-huh.
It goes without saying, right? Shmuel HaKatan, if it has to be stated that, you know, Shmuel HaKatan is not as great as Shmuel HaNavi, that means that he was very great.
Right. And presumably there were a lot of other Shmuels in between. He's
right.
The other Shmuel, he's so great that he's got to be Shmuel somebody.
That's right. He's a vice Shmuel, right? So that means you're doing pretty good.
Right.
The other explanation that the Gemara says that he's Shmuel HaKatan is because he was makhtin himself. He made himself small. The Gemara gives several examples of cases in which he, through his humility, made himself smaller. One of the examples that it says that Rabban Gamliel summoned 7 chachamim to a private meeting to establish some kind of whatever it was they were talking about, and 8 people showed up. And Rabban Gamliel said, you know, this was an invitation-only event, only someone who is a musmach for this, only someone who is, you know, invited can participate in this, and the person who's uninvited, I need them to leave. And Shmuel HaKatan gets up and he says that, okay, I'm sorry that I came, I just wanted to learn from what went on here, and, you know, and I'll go. And Rabban Gamliel says, Shmuel, sit down, everybody knows you're not the one who wasn't invited. You're, you know, the top of the line here. You're supposed to stay here. But in order to not embarrass the person who was the uninvited one, Shmuel had attempted to say, oh, I'm the one who came uninvited. I'm the one who's not qualified to be here. So Shmuel HaKatan, he was makhtim himself. He took himself out of the picture. He was a person of humility. The reason that bin pol oyvecha oyvecha al tismach. The reason you are not supposed to be happy at the fall of your enemies,
your Jewish enemies, your brethren,
or of any enemy, is because the personal downfall of this person is not what you're interested in. If the objective value is that Ratzon Hashem is not being done, and what would really be much better is for this person to do tshuva. The fact that this person had to fall in order for the right thing to come out, that should not be something that a person is happy about. Well, if a person is upset because they upset me, so now it's about me, I'm going to be happy when you who dared to offend me or affront me or go against the values that I have, I'm very happy when you fall because it's a personal thing between you and me. Even if I make it into a religious thing, at the end of the day, it's a personal thing. I am offended by you disagreeing with my values, and therefore I am happy at your downfall because because of my personal satisfaction with you who opposed me having a downfall. But if I was really purely in it, just because I was only interested in Ratzon Hashem, if I took myself out of the picture, if I was able to be makhtin myself, to reduce myself, and not see the my personal interest in this confrontation, I would not be happy at his downfall. I might be happy that at the end of the day, you know, this transgression of Ratzon Hashem is going to be, reduced or rectified now. But I would be much happier if this person did tshuva. I would be much happier if there was some other way in which the problem was rectified without the suffering of this other person. And therefore, bin poi oivcha al tisma. The chiddush of the Mishnah is Shmuel HaKatan Omer bin Pol Yivcha Al Tismach. It takes a Shmuel HaKatan to be the person who lives his life with bin Pol Yivcha Al Tismach. It takes a Shmuel HaKatan who removes himself from the picture, who doesn't see himself as needing, he doesn't have my kavod and my personal interests at stake. That's the person who can say, who can live a life motto of bin Pol Yivcha Al Tismach. And it's specifically for that reason that he is the only one who is qualified to make a bracha against the Rishayim. Because the bracha says, Kol harisha kerega sovi. All of the evil should immediately be destroyed. And then it goes through that the wicked, that they should fall, and they should stumble, and they should be cast down. And then the last thing it says, and they should be humbled. Because at the end of the day, we never daven directly in the words that we have, in the version of the tefillah that we have. We never daven directly that they should be destroyed. We daven that evil should be destroyed. Like the Gemara in Bracho says, that Bruria says to Rebbe Meir, Yitamu chatayim min ha'aretz, chatayim ksid v'lo chotim. That sin should be eradicated from the land and not sinners. Because our interest is that we're in this because we want Ratzon Hashem to be done. And therefore, we don't want the sinners to be eradicated. We want the sin to be eradicated. The only person who could construct a bracha, which was with the pure motivation that all they're interested in is not the personal grudge that I have against the Rishayim, but the rectification of the pagam in Ratzon Hashem that is being committed, the violation of Hashem's will that's being committed, the only person who is qualified and capable of constructing such a bracha with such a removal of himself and his own personal influence, his own personal offense, his own personal role in that confrontation was Shmuel HaKatan. Shmuel HaKatan, who lived the life of Bin Pol Oyevcha Al Tismach, I'm not happy with the downfall of my enemies. I wish they didn't have the downfall. I wish they wouldn't have been enemies in the first place. It's only that person, it's specifically him, who can construct a bracha of the Lam Al Shinim to be with the proper kavana, that it be a bracha which is dedicated towards not the vengeance taken against our enemies, but the rectification purely just for the sake of the rectification of the violation of Hashem's will which is going on. And I later found that the Maharal actually says that this bracha is meyusad, is based on that Gemara in Brachos. Gemara in Brachos which says that yitamu chatayim in aretz, chatayim below chotim, that this bracha is based off of this idea that we are praying for the sin to be removed from the land and not the sinners. So that's the underlying goal of the bracha, is not the eradication of the people who sinned, but it is the eradication of sin, and we hope that that can take place through tshuva. And if it doesn't take place through tshuva, then we hope that it can take place through sending them a message that they are cast down and they are humbled. And if it can't be done through that, then you know what? There might be an absolute last line, which is the destruction. But that's something that we have no interest in. That our only desire is that the rectification of the violation of Shem's Ratzon, that is what should be repaired, and that hopefully that should come through a means which does not require such destruction. And that's the real goal of the bracha, is nothing to do with the removal of the evildoers, but the removal of evil. All right.